Take a guess.
Alright, you're recording?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Hey guys, welcome to the Friends Against Government podcast. This is episode somewhere greater than 40 and somewhere less than 50. Bird dropped the ball, no surprise there. I'm Carr. With me as always, unfortunately, is Bird this time. Bird, how's it going out there in Queens?
That was very smooth, by the way, what you did there. Okay. Very smooth, very professional. I see you've been taking notes. I'm great. It's finals week, so I've been in a perpetual daze of having to get papers done and all that good stuff. So all I can think about is about international humanitarian law. So don't ask me anything today. Thanks.
Good, perfect. And hey, today we've got a really special guest. We've got it's Chris, right, from We Are Libertarians podcast.
That's right. My name is Chris Spangle from We Are Libertarians. I'm the host.
What a wonderful name, by the way. What it's a great my real name. That's such a good name.
Solid name.
Not so much for the hardcore libertarians, you know. I keep a flag like in the background just so I can trigger them, you know.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
I did. I've been freaking out.
We got to kick you off. We got to kick you off now. See you later.
I don't know. Am I allowed to say flag it here?
Yeah, you are. Of course you are.
Sure. All right.
Flag it. Yeah, you can use most words on this show.
Yeah, it's got to be. You have to say it through clenched teeth, though.
Yeah, you do. You got to say it. You got to say it like an uncle.
Complain about snowflake SJWs and then rant against the fact that this guy's named after the Star Spangled Banner.
That's really funny. Now that you say that, I didn't make that connection, but I knew your name. Your name sounded very American for some reason. Like, it sounds very American. I can't think of another place where the name Spangle would be found.
It means a shiny little piece of metal, you know. It's like you spangle, like a bedazzling sort of a situation. So I'm very bright, I guess.
Do you ever consider
that? Bird knows that process well, the bedazzling scenario.
I was going to say, did you ever consider maybe, I don't know if we want to get into this specifically, but I don't know, maybe you could consider doing some kind of sex move called the Spangle Dangle. Have you ever considered this?
How do you know that my nickname isn't already the Spangler?
I hope it is.
Great point.
I hope it is.
Point, counterpoint. back at you.
We have a co-host on We Are Libertarians who has been known to work as a stripper, and that's what she calls me.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Right. Miranda.
That's good. Christ. Okay. There you go. So we got the Spangler, and we got the fucking automobile over there. Yep. What's going on, gentlemen? We got some stuff going on, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, we got stuff. We got some stuff. Are we going to talk about the snowstorm, or did that time come and go?
I'm fine with talking about snowstorms if you want.
Okay.
You want to tell me about you want to regale me about your snowstorm?
Well, I didn't get any down here, not in Texas. But,
okay. Who did? Oh, you did, Chris, right?
No. Well, we have a dusting outside. It's a little chilly, but I'm from Indianapolis, and so, you know, we live in a perpetual state from late December to March, basically, of 2 inches of snow. You know, so it's nothing to us. But you were telling me in downtown New York in Manhattan, which is, if you've never been, you should go. I don't know if you've been, Carr, but it's mind-bending. And you were telling me, Bird, that there is no snow in New York. It doesn't stick because it's so hot in Manhattan because of all the people and the steam and all that.
It's my theory, at least, because it's weird because you'd think, oh, you're right near the water, right? So it's got to be freezing. And it is. It's just the snow doesn't stick. So it's either lizards or steam.
I think it's all the hot air you Yankees blow around.
That was a cheap pop, Carr. Yeah. That was a cheap pop going for the southern base.
And then I said to the city boy, Carr, I said, you know, hey, Bird, you're invited to come out to the Midwest anytime you want. There was nervous laughter, and he kind of,
yeah,
maybe I'll do that. Yeah,
what's right, right.
Maybe I'll go. Maybe. I'll go. I don't like saying fly over to new guests.
Yeah, if you get Bird away, if you get one like little circle of hot air away from the rest of the other circles of hot air, then you figure them out real fast.
All right, what's up? Give me some news. Somebody throw some news my way, and I'll give you an opinion on it.
Man, I tell you what, I've been like in a news black hole the last week. Also, I am so damn behind on podcasts, which always makes me nervous because like if there's some podcast does like a challenge to us or shouts us out or shit talks us, like I want to be on it. I want to know like immediately,
right,
so that we can return fire. Right?
I mean, has this happened? Like, Has this?
I want to escalate. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's mostly in my mind, but I just I want to confront and escalate immediately. That's my usual routine.
The best way to get into a fight. Trust me, I've been in a lot of fights over the years. I've done my podcast for 7 years. Yeah, it's been a long road. I've gotten into a lot of fights with a lot of different people, and the best way to do it is to pick a fight. So, who do you want to fight with? Who are you go?
I don't know. I feel like Rollo and Slappy are too obvious.
Yeah,
We should blind sign somebody. Just
that's what I was telling you, Carl. Were we not texting about this? We were texting about this. We were gonna. Oh, Chris, this is what you should help us do. Since you're such an expert at fighting. What you should help us do is you should help us formulate a plan to just totally rip someone to shreds out of the blue. I don't know
just
who.
Just out of the blue.
Someone who we've never even interacted with, preferably.
Crush him.
Just.
Well, so I think you, like, how bad do you want the fight to be?
11 out of 10.
Yeah, like, bring it way up.
Is it going to be like a fake fight between.
No,
you
know, no.
Like, no. I feel like I want to just get real into it.
All right. Yeah, well, then you can't fight with somebody like Mark Clare from Lions of Liberty.
Oh,
or
he's
Johnny
a doll.
Adam.
I would never do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark is too nice. Johnny is too nice. You know, Jason. Jason and Tom are like too big. Like they're like the next level. I have fought a lot with Roger Paxton from the Lava Flow.
Okay.
Is that right?
He scares me, though. See, the problem is he scares me.
We need to pick out somebody weaker. Like, weakly, yeah. I'm even fine. I'm fine punching down.
We have Roger, to punch down.
The fags punch down.
Looks very scary because of his beard. He looks like he's about to attack a small village, but he's actually very short.
Okay.
Well, so am I. So he still has the upper hand.
So like half of our podcast is we gotta bring it even further down. I think.
Yeah, we gotta go. We have to fight a midget. Are there any?
You're gonna get yourself into a real fight with that situation. You're right. You need to punch down because you can't fight with somebody like you can't pick a fight with Jason Stapleton. He's got like 20,000 an episode. He's just really big. He's not gonna know who you are. You need to punch down. So. Who is a podcaster that I always like to fight with somebody that I have some level of respect for. If I don't respect that person, then I don't feel that it is worth my time.
Uh-huh.
I want to have a fight with somebody that I know is a worthy opponent.
Uh-huh.
So is there a smaller podcast out there that you feel, you know, they do a really good show, but I need to pick a fight with them? Maybe, you know, a Sal the Agorist or, you know
who I'm? Oh, man.
Go ahead.
We could launch just a full-scale attack on Tasting Anarchy.
We could do that.
Just full scale. They're local. I can get physical with it.
That's true. You can do that.
You have a horse.
Do I have a horse?
I'm thinking, the Fagcast Cavalry.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
You ride in there on your horse.
Uh-huh.
With you have a jousting session with them. Maybe get them a horse. You take it to the next level. You have to think big production here.
Right. Escalate.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because and a lot of flair. Because if you're gonna get in a fight, just calling them like, "Oh, you're not a real anarchist," like nobody gives a fuck about
that. Right.
Like,
work.
They need some. If people are gonna watch this, they're gonna pay attention to you. You got to bring some bedazzling to it. You gotta really, really capture people's imagination. So, what was the name of this? Tasting Liberty?
Tasting Anarchy.
That's what we should start, though. But that's brilliant, what you just did right there. You got to do the subtle. We're not quite sure what your name is.
Yes. Really
very catty.
Down. Yeah.
Here's what you do. You start a Tasting Liberty segment or podcast or a Facebook page. Or
undermine
something.
Them.
Undermine them. Mock them mercilessly. Take their content. Change the content a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then when you're called out for it, go, "I don't even know who you are."
Oh, wow.
I like it. Okay, here's I'm just going to spitball ideas. So they're a wine enthusiast and liberty enthusiast podcast. We do something slightly different. We do mead. We review and enjoy mead.
The mead and the horse car is really work. That's a good combination.
Look, man. Yeah, it's coming together, right? It's coming together. This is going to be good. I think this is going to be really, really good for listener count, too. Like, there's nothing like conflict.
No, this is how you achieve clout.
Well, you need
this
to
is where we get the clout.
Well, this is the Putin strategy, right? Like Putin, every time his, you want to save this really for when your audience, I don't know if you, how long have you guys done this podcast?
It's like about almost a year. Almost. Yeah.
Okay. So what you will learn over time, you guys are on the upswing, but there comes times where it's like you guys are either in a fight or you had a couple bad shows and the audience isn't totally with you.
That's all the time, Chris.
All the time. Okay.
We're already there. We basically started there.
Yeah.
So I've listened to two episodes. I understand. And so there's going to be times where you're kind of in an ebb. And so that's when you roll out, you're fighting against another empire. You're rolling into Crimea or you're blockading certain parts of the Ukraine. And then you rally your troops at home
against
this lesser podcast. And your people get all pumped up. The Patreon goes up.
Yes.
And are they on a network? Because that really helps too, because then you can start firing.
Are you saying, you're saying we need to attack someone on a network?
I don't know. I'd go, like, if you're going to be Russia, you need to go after a NATO, because then you get more bang for your buck, because how many people, this Tasting Liberty podcast that you're thinking about fighting with, they probably have like 10 people that listen to it.
Oh, if that.
No, they're probably around. They're probably not around us.
I've never even heard of them. And I run a website.
See, Carr, he's doing a better job than you are.
I run libertarianpodcast.com, where I have archived every libertarian podcast I can find. I added you guys to the featured section.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Tasting Liberty. I don't know what this is.
This is going to end up getting them so many more views than us.
Right. So what you have.
But then we hijack their feeds.
You're right.
And their Twitter profiles, and we just become them.
You're right. They have to respond, right? They have That's to respond right. to us.
The other angle is go after a Libertarian Party sympathetic. I've seen a lot of people do this because it's easy to pick on the Libertarian Party. And so what a lot of podcasters do is they find an LP-friendly podcast and pick on that podcast or that person, that media outlet, because then everybody, all the Facebook libertarians, the people who've never actually canvassed in their life, but have an opinion, rally around that particular podcast, and they start going after, the LP sucks, and Larry Sharp didn't do that well, and
we should pick a fight with Larry Sharp. Wow, that would be a real heel turn.
Oh, you went after Larry Sharp. That may be too much heat for you.
It would be a real New York battle in the streets.
Yeah, that's true. You're physically located there, Bird. So that does, you know.
I'll go up to him and I'll roast him about his outfit game.
Yeah. 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 See, that's going to be the problem with Tasting Anarchy, is that we agree on virtually everything and they're very non-LP oriented. So maybe Tasting Anarchy can't be our target.
I was thinking, now what about this, Chris? I'm going to throw this name at you because I have an idea, and you tell me if this name is a good idea. We don't go after Dave Smith. We go after Robbie the Fire Bernstein.
Is he like a producer or something?
He's his second, you know, on the show. He's basically, I guess, the producer, but he's his second.
See, that's a great, because once you achieve a certain level in podcasting in the libertarian world, you just stop paying attention to the competition, and you stop really paying attention to your Twitter, your Facebook, all of that. You know, when you become as successful as we are libertarians, you'll understand.
Have we been roasted? Did we?
Is this wait, are you a tech? Are you punching down at us?
He's
right now?
Roasting us as he's
going on here?
He's roasting us as he's teaching us to roast. This is what he's doing.
We figured you out.
It would have been great if when we asked him to come on, he was like, sure, but there is a matter of expenses. Like, he makes us pay him.
No. I just send the bill after.
You're like a doctor.
The invoice.
Right. The bandwidth costs $13.79. You're
funny.
Like, I don't, how much does bandwidth cost in India? What do they have, like, gerbil rolling wheels?
That's funny.
Why is punching down in the notes section on this invoice? So,
it'll actually say beating up nerds. But that's a good solution, because the producer is going to sit there and go, what did I ever do to these two? And then at some point, after about 3 or 4 or 5 weeks, he's going to be producing a podcast. He'll be sitting there across from Dave, and I'll go, hey, what is the deal with these guys? Or Dave might catch it, or somebody will, you know, and then all of a sudden they might talk about it on the show, and then all of a sudden you're in business. So that's actually a pretty good pretty good move. Right.
We may just have to do that. Now the problem is Robbie is such a likable person. It's going to be difficult to attack him.
Very difficult.
But
you guys have to climb that mountain. No.
You're in the media now. You can shape whatever perception you want. You're right. So I can make you guys look whatever way I want by going out there and crafting
lying.
The right
and lying.
50% of the country thinks the Russian collusion thing actually happened. But so like it's just because the media keeps repeating it over and over. So
right. So repetition is key, is what you're saying. And listeners, this is not just for us. You know, if you want to expand your clout, maybe at the workplace or maybe I don't know at the local Panera Bread. You know, follow these tips.
Yes. Yeah. If you're at Panera, then you have to hate Noodles and Company.
Yep. Right. Initiate conflict and immediately escalate it.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is the libertarian's guide to growing the movement. Be a dick. That's okay. Listen, it works all the time.
Be a gigantic dick about it.
God, we talk about that a lot on the show.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, there's the plan. That's one way to raise our clout. Now, besides, because at this point, I didn't think we were going in this direction, but Chris, you're clearly someone with a lot of clout, and so we need to get you for everything we have.
Did you have a direction for the show at all?
Because no, we never do. No, we never.
No,
do.
Actually, it's completely out of control. We have
no
idea.
You guys knew my name when we started this podcast.
No, we just paid you. We just. But no, since you're here, I think this is a valuable opportunity to, you know, Carr and I, we talk about clout a lot. And in fact, we had a pretty bad scuffle in the past over the clout wars to decide who had more clout. And so I think since you clearly have more clout than the two of us, it would behoove us to mine as much information from your brain as possible about ways to achieve clout in the libertarian community. So number one, pick fights.
Yep.
Pick fights. That's right.
All right, what else is bubbling? Maybe a number two?
You need your own meme department.
Oh, we have that. Oh, we do actually have that.
We do. We need to get more coordinated about it, though, because, I mean, like everything we do, it's fragmented and confused.
Schizophrenic.
Yeah, and immediately oscillates from one polar position to the other.
Yes, yeah. So,
and quite frankly, kind of pathetic.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe pathetic. Yeah. Maybe weak would be a better way to describe it.
That one felt too mean. I apologize.
Maybe emasculated.
Yeah.
Memes are like, in all seriousness, you know, we in early 2016, several of us were just kind of like, this meme thing is really starting to take off. So we started making memes of each other. And through the 2016 election, as people are kind of paying attention to politics, they started paying attention to our Facebook feeds. And listening to the podcast as a result, because we looked like we were having so much fun with each other on Facebook that they all said, wow, okay, look at this. Like, there was a new meme of one of us every single day. And it was really a fun growth period for us. And then from, like, we went from in 2017, at the end of 2016, on the election day, we had like 2,500 downloads an episode. And then now by the end of 2017, it was like 10. And it was just solely because of shitposting memes.
Hmm.
And the quality of the content, I think, was like, your baby's your podcast. Like, it has to be actually like really good content. You guys are doing a show that people are catching on to. Now you just need to like focus in on your content, make it consistent on the podcast side, and then shitpost and make it look like you're a fun group of people to hang out with, and then you'll be fine. That's that's like really like the biggest way that we grew was just shitposting memes.
Shitposting memes. See, I think we could do that. That's an achievable goal, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Let's target that. Let's say that we're going to shitpost more and have a more cohesive message behind our memes.
Right.
Now, when you had your meme department, when you organized it, did you target it at people? I'm trying to get back to the first rule here. Was it targeted at people, or was it sort of just like, oh, these are inside jokes, you want to be in on this?
It was part inside joke, part jokes about politics. So it was never aimed. I all joking aside from the first part, I'm actually the type of person who just believes, like, if you're going to be involved in libertarianism and you're going to use whatever talents you have to grow the movement, I'm not going to pick on you. There are people that I personally dislike that I just won't pick on other than Joshua Smith. But that's a whole different story.
Who's that?
Exactly. And so you have...
He did it again. Did you see how he just did it again? Rule number one, yeah. Again. Brilliant.
You don't want to pick on other people. Like, I support and promote any libertarian podcast regardless of ideology. I'm not one of those people who's like, I'm just going to create the exclusive anarchist network. Because I just think you're narrowing your reach and the amount of people that will listen to you. So, and at some point, you're going to run into these people in person. And so, like, if you've picked a fight with Mance Rayder and then you show up to some convention and you have to, like, see Mance, it gets really uncomfortable. So mm-hmm. there's just no point in picking a fight with a Mance or a Jason or a Tom or any of these people. Hmm. So the jokes were about each other. It was we don't do as much of it anymore because people have kind of grown up a little bit, unfortunately. But the jokes were all about each other. It was about the show. It was about our particular characters that we kind of have. You know, I am a very very libertarian person, but if I see a brunette and she is liberal and she's kind of mousy and works at a library, then I immediately get wood. And so,
did you just describe Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Okay, get to work.
Don't make me say things on the air I don't want. I find her very attractive.
Okay, here we go. So this is rule number three: get Chris Spangle to sabotage himself.
Yes. This is the chess game continues.
That's rule three.
And so, yeah, you take those little inside jokes that you have on the air and then you put them online with the memes. But then you also, if there's a current event happening that's kind of funny or a Trump thing, then you do a meme about that. Like Kathy Griffin, when Kathy Griffin held up the Trump head, mm-hmm. my co-host put me holding up his head, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. All right. Be relatable, relate it to, the happenings of today.
Yeah, okay. You guys have a podcast very much like the earlier days of We Are Libertarians, where it was much more focused on, like, it was a comedy podcast in a lot of ways. I think you guys, couple times I've listened, I'm like, man, this just feels like 2016, like the glory days of We Are Libertarians.
Oh, nice.
So you're doing the right thing. You're entertaining people. You're getting a lot of buzz out there. So now you just kind of need to bring it all together, make it a little more cohesive, really pay attention to the fundamentals here. So you're like a young LeBron in high school, but if you go out drinking too many nights,
right,
then you're not going to be LeBron.
I mean, I'm like LeBron. He's like, I guess, Carmelo, but you know, whatever the case may be. All right. Rule five, attack Carr on the podcast to gain personal clout.
At least I got a little bit of a college education.
It's been a year there. I haven't as I write my 30-page fucking thesis paper about some nonsense.
What are you writing that shit on?
The Sri Lankan genocide in 2012.
What? Wasn't that by the Buddhists or something?
No, that's in Myanmar.
No.
We'll do this on another podcast.
Okay, yeah. Back to the task.
All right, All right, I got rule three, which is make you sabotage yourself, Chris. So now rule four, maybe we could get a rule based on exposure. Let's get another exposure rule in, because we had attack other people, right? And then we had meme department. Now, meme department seems to be like generally, hey, this is how we get people to come in if you're just browsing Twitter or the internet. Give us one more exposure rule, if you can. What would we do?
Encourage your listeners to share the podcast. Nice. Because I'm telling you the secrets as a 10-year veteran of podcasting. I do it for a living, for God's sake. Nothing works like your friends telling each other. Like, I know about your show because my friend Melissa told me about your show. You know, it doesn't matter.
By the way, much respect to at not Meg. Much respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she is. She's great, and she was just raving about your podcast, and so I immediately distrusted it because of her tastes. But she was wrong. I mean, she was right. So No, the third thing is get your fans. If you're a fan of the show, you've got to share it. If they have a Patreon or a donation, support it. Like any media that you really like, you need to tell people about it. Like if you've read a book and you love the book, or you've watched a documentary, you love the documentary, if you listen to a podcast, the only way that we grow is through word of mouth. You know, the other thing that really helped in terms of growth, and this could be maybe like four and a half here, is the titles of my podcasts matter a ton. Like it can matter hundreds of downloads if it's like a super in journalism it's called newsjacking. So if you're going to start like the Huffington Post site, what they did is they said, okay, we're going to write articles about current events, and then we're going to just jack whatever current events so we can get Google hits. And so that's sort of the same thing. Like if you're talking about for instance, the show we recorded yesterday, posted today, it's called The History of Impeachment. And I know that over the next 3 or 4 months, there's going to be a lot of people searching the iTunes directory for impeachment. And there's very few libertarian shows out there doing The History of Impeachment. And so we have a good shot of that person who's a libertarian, conservative leaning person on the right going, okay, they're libertarians, I can trust them, I'll listen to this. So like, that's really important. But like, sharing it and making sure your titles are like really geared towards what you know, you're making a promise in your title, essentially, is what I'm saying. Like you're promising, if you give me an hour of your time, this is what you're going to get out of it.
That's really interesting that you say that, because our two largest episodes, and they are large as compared to the other episodes of this podcast, one of them is our Thanksgiving special, which is obviously released the day before Thanksgiving and has Thanksgiving special in the title. And then the other episode that we did, which is for some reason, and Carr and I to this day cannot figure out why, but it is for some reason absolutely huge, is we did an episode entitled The Moonspiracy, where we talk about Carr's sort of, Carr, what would you call it? Game theory about the moon landing, right?
Yeah, that's basically so, it. Yeah, game theory angle on why it could have been hoaxed or what have you.
So with that, and I guess people were searching moon conspiracy, which, I mean, is usually very popular. It kind of always is very popular. It's funny that you say that. So for anyone listening, he's absolutely telling the truth. The titles matter. And now that you say that, it kind of puts the moon conspiracy thing together.
Yeah, people believe conspiracy theories, or they think about them, but they don't want to say them out loud to their friends because they don't want to be judged to be weird.
Oh, so that's what our job is. Okay, good.
Yeah, if a podcast talks about stuff that other people... I've noticed this too. Like, if I talk about the way that I feel about something, or my thoughts on a conspiracy, or, you know, sort of an opinion that may not be mainstream, then it gets more views or it gets more listens because people... to feel less alone. Mm-hmm. Like you're kind of exercising that thing in them where they're like, yeah, you know what, this HW running the assassination of Kennedy, I believe this, I watched a documentary on it, but it's nice to hear that other people think that too, you know. So it kind of makes people feel a little less weird. Yeah, I think it's huge to really make that promise in your title. The other thing is interviewing people. I don't do an interview show. I do more of a breakdown of current events and talk about current events. And then I have a bunch of like a research team and like a bunch of people. And we all get together and like break down the history of impeachment. And here's how this applies to Trump and all this stuff, you know, and it probably would be easier if I interviewed like an impeachment specialist, but I really enjoy the academics of it because I'm a huge nerd and I don't have much going on. So, but you know, a great way. Like I look at Mark Claire a lot of times at Lions of Liberty with a little bit of jealousy because Mark knows everybody in the libertarian movement. They love Mark and they've all been on a show, and you know, and he has a huge podcast because he taps into the brains of other people and uses their platform to help grow his, and he gets a lot of benefit out of it because he's learning and having a great conversation with somebody else. But I think that really kind of distills down. It's like somebody has to learn something from your show. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I learn, Mark learns, what are you learning as you're doing this show? And as you learn something and you're passing it on, you're teaching somebody something else, then that's going to be that thing that you're selling. Like, they really get something out of it. So, you know, in terms of, I would say number five is like, really make sure that you're paying attention to what you're putting into the show. What's your selling proposition, really? Like, for me, the tagline is, sound smarter with your friends. You give me a couple of hours, I'm going to teach you everything you need to know about impeachment or the history of World War One. You know, here's all the stuff that you need to know right now and how it applies to your life today.
Okay, that's a good one. So, rule five, I think I would teach say people.
That's pretty bad news for us, Bird.
The closest thing we ever had to teaching people was when we did the episode on philosophical zombies. That was the closest to teaching people anything.
Don't discount the power of entertaining people and being a light listen. And I don't mean that to be mean or anything. Like, I just think sometimes, like, when people are at work, like, I'm listening to podcasts at work. Like, I like your show because when I listen to it at work, it's a fun listen. It's, you know, you can do five things at once. Like, it's just entertaining. And that's what you're selling people. That's what you're giving to people when they give you the time.
I think that's why we started it. I think because we were listening to podcasts and we were like, not one of these podcasts is something that I could just listen to while I was doing homework or something. And so, I mean, that was kind of the point of it. Now, if we evolve and change, I'm totally down for that. But yeah, that was that. I feel like that's the only reason why people started listening. That was all the feedback we got was, this is different. This is something, this is new.
If it's just you two catching up and hanging out with each other and there's like a genuine friendship and you're having a good time in the conversation, people love to eavesdrop into on that. Like, that's what you're giving, that they're almost like friends sitting around the table with you.
That's what I had a few people describe it as, which is, I mean, that's cool. That's a good thing to cultivate. But all right, so rule five, teach people stuff. All right, Carr, we got to start reading.
We're going to need to, that's going to require some hours in the lab.
Yeah, here's what I'd say. Number five, give people something of value.
Okay.
All right.
Give
people, that may be the better way to put it.
Something of value.
That may be even worse news for us, Bird.
Yeah, we are utterly valueless.
that can be our claim to fame, the least value in the libertarian
community. Yeah, our claim to fame is that we debunk Ludwig von Mises' proposal.
Those guys are incredibly invaluable.
Now, listen, boys, the Dollar Tree exists.
That's what we do, the whole claim to fame of this podcast is that we debunk Ludwig von Mises' proposal that value is subjective because we are objectively valueless.
Yeah, I dig it. We set up shop in compromised communities and sell them dollar pots and pans.
Yeah, relate to the people.
That is our business proposal.
That's good. All right, look, Chris, we sapped five rules out of you. If you want to keep going on the rules, you can, but you said something which, I don't know, went had a light bulb go off in my head. So we can reinstate the rules at the end, but right now, I heard you mention the term conspiracy theory, and when someone mentions the term conspiracy theory, my mouth starts to water. I start to think of lizards and aliens and Sasquatches, and so I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm going to need you to tell us of one crazy conspiracy theory that you believe.
I am, let me preface this, because you have to. I am not a conspiratorial person by nature. So my background, leaving college, went into the news talk business and like worked as a reporter. And so I've seen these people who go on to the people that I covered are now like in Washington, and I know what dumbasses they are. So yeah, like, right. I look at it and I go, I just think it's hard in this day and age for conspiracy theories to actually work, for false flags to actually work. And I think when there is a false flag, like the Syrian gas attack in 2013, we know it. So I just think whatever the hive mind or the wisdom of crowds is, we just kind of have a lot of stuff figured out. And I think one of those is the Kennedy assassination.
That's a classic.
We all kind of look at things like, 9/11, and most of us kind of go, yeah, but you'd have to have like 1,000 people killed to keep everybody quiet about that. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Or Sandy Hook, it just doesn't make sense. But then when you go back and look at the Kennedy assassination, it's like, okay, but you're telling me that this one guy with an inadequate rifle actually killed the president of the United States with shots that don't make sense. Like, what else is going on here? And I've read the Caro books on Lyndon Johnson, and he is a truly evil human being. So it makes total sense to me that you have a young charismatic president, somebody that is, you know, a threat to the CIA and the Dulles brothers, because after the Cuban Missile Crisis, Kennedy goes, oh, that was really bad. If you don't know what the Cuban Missile Crisis is, we literally were minutes away from a nuclear war with the United, with the USSR. And Kennedy backed down because he bargained with the Russians and said, all right, we'll move some missiles out of, you know, Eastern Europe if you move out of Cuba. And so that's what happened. But so after that, he was just like, this is all getting out of control. The CIA is giving me bad information. They're pushing us into places we don't want to go. I'm going to end it. And then he was also talking about ending the Federal Reserve, or at least limiting its scope. And I think that Johnson, in coordination with the Dulles brothers, in coordination with certain members of the mafia, ended up killing Kennedy. And, you know, in the process, using an FBI patsy in Oswald to make him the fall guy. So I think he probably was in the book depository, but I just think there's something else there that we don't know. I think Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. were probably taken out by the American government for a lot of the same reasons. I just think they were a threat to the existing power structure. I think that I don't necessarily buy onto the idea of a deep state and like the Alex Jones globalist, you know, it's all, there's this network of people working in the government today. But I do think that there's entrenched interests. And I think that you see Bill Clinton, this outsider from Arkansas, who's a threat to the established order in Washington, D.C. Well, he gets impeached on some bullshit. Then you see Donald Trump come in and he's a threat to the established order. Let's impeach him on some bullshit. So I do think that there, and I think it's a powerful lesson for libertarians. I think if you were to magically wave a wand and elect Gary Johnson in 2016, a lot of the ways that Donald Trump would be, that Donald Trump is treated by the media and the establishment, Gary Johnson would have it twice as bad.
Yeah, because it doesn't help that he's also a bumbling moron, but yeah, you're right.
Let me explain something to you, son. Gary Johnson is, there's a lot of people listening right now. Gary Johnson was the right choice in 2016. I don't think he was the most pure choice. I think I personally agreed most with Daryl Perry, but I think if you're talking about the choice in 2016, like that's the problem. Gary Johnson, like what other choice were you going to make?
You know? I don't disagree with you, but I still think he's a bumbling idiot, but I don't disagree with you at all about that.
But that's my, I just think that whenever you have somebody who threatens the established order, there's going to be problems, and there's going to be an effort to remove that person.
Yeah, for sure.
And the quickest means of removal is assassination. The longer is character assassination through impeachment. Mm-hmm. And I look at it and I kind of go, yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's some secret Illuminati planning all this stuff, or if people just kind of act in their own self-interest when they're the Peter Strucks of the world.
I think the Illuminati thing is an easy way for people to explain all of the strange happenings in the world. It's almost a write-off.
Well, the brain likes order. And so to have the idea that just some random event in the world could take place, like a 9/11, that then your brain goes, it's just not possible that we could have all these random events lead up to this thing. There has to be some secret plan,
right?
And it helps order the brain. But it's just like, no, go read Ali Sufan's book about how we fucked up everything when it comes to investigating bin Laden and all of our foreign policy.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or, and especially because we're helping him write his new book, or read Scott Horton's book, which details, I think, the best I've ever read, the story of how bin Laden was led, not that he's innocent of it, but how bin Laden was, had the whole train of how bin Laden was led to do everything he did, how it was known he was going to attack by the Pakistani embassy, that message was not relayed for whatever reason. I believe it was because the messenger didn't make it in time, but it was well known. It's not a conspiracy that the United States government did it. In fact, like you're saying, it lends credence to what you're saying, is that if anything, it was a combination of the total ineptitude of everybody working in the government at that time that led to something like that. That's my take on it. We've had people dispute the like dumb up top theory, but I'm one of the people who believes it's more often than not dumb up top.
I mean, I think there's a lot of that, but yeah, you, I guess I approach it from like how many people knew about the impending attack.
Right.
And, you know, probably somewhere greater than 3 and less than 50. I don't know. Just spitballing.
And if you wanted to physically take down... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, yeah. I said, what allegiances do they all have? Mm. I guarantee you there's it's not all Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
I mean, just backing into it a little bit. So, I don't know. You know, there's wacky theories out there, but I think there were powerful people, and this, you know, may benefit them in one way or another. And I would be willing to put a lot of money on the fact that not every single person was an Al-Qaeda flag waver that was behind that, you know?
Right.
Well, if you look at so if you're not a reader, they're on Hulu or Amazon, there's a series called The Looming Tower, and it's about the breakdown of the lead up to 9/11. And it's all pretty historically accurate based on, I've read a couple of the different books that this is based off of, and they got it right. But the guys who actually flew the planes, who were in the Florida flight school, for instance, when mm-hmm. they came in, they were fully expecting that they would get arrested, because they were like, there's no way that we're not known operatives. They were known operatives. They were known by mm-hmm. both FBI and the CIA, and they couldn't get the arrest warrant because the CIA wouldn't release the names. And they ended up getting through the line scot-free. And had that never happened, 9/11 probably wouldn't have happened. But the CIA didn't want to cooperate with the FBI, and it's just gross negligence. I mean,
well, it wouldn't have happened on that day.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, this was a long time coming. It was a long time coming. If it failed that day, because it did fail before, it failed in 93, right? And, you know, and many times in different scenarios at different locations around the world, it whatever, you know, we're referring to here, failed or wasn't as impactful as they thought it was going to be, but it was going to happen. There were enough people with enough interest in it, whatever it ended up being, in this case 9/11, was going to happen. I'm fairly convinced of that.
And you look at the bringing down of the towers, like how many people would you have to pay off or kill to not, after nearly 20, over 20 years at this point, or nearly 20 years, I'm not sure what it is. How many people were in the building, the night security guards, the cleaning people, the people working late, the military men who went and put the thermite in? Like, it just, that's 1,000 people maybe. It just, and so I think we do ourselves a disservice. A lot of what I talk about on my show is how to message this stuff. Mm-hmm. And even if you are a loose changer and like you're just way into the conspiracy theories, you have to sit there, and I would believe almost 100% of those people understand the foreign policy failures that led up to why 9/11 happened. And that's really what's important. Like getting the secret cabal of Jewish bankers that you're worried about stopping, you're probably not going to stop, but you probably can influence some congressmen if you're not labeled a conspiracy theorist when you go and talk to them about foreign policy issues.
Right.
Because I do think there is a growing, this has been one of the better things about having Trump as president, is that he has softened the more neocon elements of the Republican Party. And I think the people under 40 in the Republican Party that identify as Republican, be it the base or the people who are elected, are hopefully more willing to listen to a non-interventionist foreign policy, because they're more comfortable with the Ron Pauls or the Rand Pauls of the world. And you have a better shot if you're not labeled a conspiracy theorist. And that's what I don't believe in label people a conspiracy theorist. I certainly used to, but I've seen what has happened to Alex Jones and how that particular term is used to just discredit anybody for no reason.
Yeah, and I mean, even in our short lifetimes, and I definitely went through my conspiracy phase when I was younger, but even in our short lifetimes, I mean, you remember and I don't know how old you are, but I mean, I was a working adult when WikiLeaks came out, and prior to that, you were labeled a conspiracy theorist for thinking that the government was surveilling you. I mean, really, when you think that wasn't that long ago, that was what, 12 or 11, maybe, or so. Maybe 2010. I don't really remember, but so it's like I occupy a position where I think that a lot of the times to what you were saying, it really behooves people, especially if you're thinking about communicating with a broad range of different groups of people, it behooves you not necessarily to broadcast, just come out and be like, the laser beams hit the fucking towers from a satellite with the gay frogs, and you know, and it behooves you to be a little bit more measured about it. But on the other hand, keeping in mind that some really, really wacky shit has happened. I mean, we've talked about like MK Ultra and stuff like that, and you know, on here, and that happened. You know, it's important to remember that shit happened, and that's fucked up. And
that led to Ted Kaczynski, the biggest mass murderer in American history, the Unabomber. I mean, he was MK Ultra.
You know, so yeah, it's weird. It's like you almost feel like you're wearing two, because yeah, I totally get you. Like some of the, because, and I think the flat earth stuff has been a really testament to this, is because it opens up a vector, a very, very that we, or a lot of libertarians I see, are very, very vulnerable to, in that it's almost like seeking, people want to be familiar with the most underground punk band, and they are not willing to stop where they like it. They have to go dive deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and just show everybody that they know this underground punk band, right? Whereas, like, it's the same way with conspiracy theories. You just see people go deeper and deeper and deeper just because they're willing to occupy that little mountain of insanity. Whereas it maybe you got to stop when you find something, a reasonable explanation. Hold it a little bit loosely. Say, hey, look, I'm open to any other stuff here. But it does seem reasonable that after 3 decades or 2 decades of pestering, that yeah, Osama bin Laden actually did have something to do with 9/11, right. And it didn't, and it wasn't directed energy necessarily, unless presented with some other.
Not a liar. Osama bin Laden's a lot of things, but he's not a liar, and he gave 3 warnings. And Ali Soufan, in his book The Black Banners, talks about those 3 warnings before the coal and before the Nairobi bombing, before 9/11. Like, they were all, those signs were all there.
Yeah.
It's that our government was incompetent to stop it. And I'm, you know, I talk about this kind of stuff on my show too, but I trust the listener to make up their own mind. And so what I try to do is I try to present all the different views. You know, here are the different strains of thought about somebody like George H.W. Bush. You know, I'm not going to only give you the alternative history of George H.W. Bush. I'm going to give you the 3 different streams or the different thoughts. And I do think that, you know, we mentioned Ocasio-Cortez and we mentioned George H.W. Bush. You know, Donald Trump, I think, falls into this. I had a co-host at one point in 2016 because I was very against Trump. And he just kind of said to me, you realize that you're doing the libertarian movement no... You're doing a great disservice, because Trump is bringing a lot of new people into the political process. Ocasio-Cortez is bringing a lot of new people into the process. And when you're not necessarily criticizing, but like, there's that line, you know, I think the Ocasio-Cortez being dumb jokes have kind of, they tip at a certain point into cruel, like with Sarah Palin, for instance, or you're if you're a critic of Trump, like the Max Boots of the world on CNN have tipped over and just shrill, and you tune them out. Like, when we go too far in criticizing individuals of statism, essentially, then I think we do ourselves a disservice, because we put a lot of new people off, and then when they're ready to take a look at libertarianism after they're frustrated in 2 or 3 years, they're going to remember what a dick you were. And So I'm a big proponent of, Van Jones talked about it, you know, when everybody was talking about community organizing and Barack Obama and Van Jones and Glenn Beck was exposing all the, you know, with his chalkboards and everything, dropping the radical pose for the radical ends. And I think libertarians have not done a good job of presenting themselves as a hopeful alternative for the future, because we're too busy virtue signaling to our own echo chamber to show we're the most pure or we're the most hardcore. And I think we're really harming the libertarian message by doing that. It's, you know, I could probably be more popular if I just were pumping out anarchism, and I identified with that solely, and I probably would be bigger than I am now, but at the end of the day, I just don't think that that's really effective for a lot of new people, because think about when you were a libertarian. When you were a new libertarian, you kind of liked George Bush, or you kind of liked Bill Clinton, or you kind of liked these myths about the state. You believe that the Constitution mattered. Like you have to be sensitive to the fact that you don't want to mock those people and make those people feel alienated from the movement, because they just aren't as further down the libertarian train as you are. And that's a lot of what I try to do, is just to be sensitive to the fact that there's a lot of new people listening to me. And, you know, I'm happy to be their first taste of libertarianism and move them off to a Mance Rayder or to a Lava Flow or to a Tom Woods to get further indoctrination and let them be the 201 class. But and I think conspiracy theorists fall under that. Like, what are you saying that will turn new people off to libertarianism? Like, if we're here, you know, chit-chatting, then that's one thing. But if we're trying to win new people to libertarianism, we need to think about what we talk about and how we talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. I think Bert and I had that discussion earlier, a while earlier, probably one of our first episodes, was just talking about marketing and positioning a little bit. And like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, I am hardcore, you know, and that always did speak to me. I don't want to say always, obviously, like I came into the mood, but I hated Bush and Clinton for that matter, although I was a little bit young, but, you know, Ron Paul really spoke to me. And so I almost went, as far as my interest in any of this, I did get pretty hardcore pretty quick. And that's not just bragging or anything like that. I'm just, you know, just thinking about how people come in. And so to me, I say, okay, how do I emulate that? How do I emulate what he was able to do? Because he basically fast-tracked me. I mean, he got me interested in the right things without all the hang-ups. And like, that's in some sense, although maybe it doesn't seem like it to a lot of viewers because we talk a bunch of shit, but in some sense, that is, if I'm talking about a strategy for taking Joe on the street to a relatively hardcore libertarian, I'm looking to emulate Ron Paul in a lot of ways, because Ron Paul basically just kneecapped all the hangups. Like, I just slid right down that slide.
Humor is a huge part of that too. I think I love a lot of the media in the libertarian movement, but a lot of it is done by professors. And I think that that is just not where a lot of people connect. I think we make the mistake of thinking like, I connect with this thing after being a libertarian for 10 years, so everybody will. Mm-hmm. And it's just not how it works. And I think, you know, that's part of what I like, why you guys are doing what you're doing, what I do, what I'm doing, like trying to put libertarianism into the common parlance.
Yeah.
Connect with people. And I think humor is a great way. Have you guys seen Freedom Tunes?
I know the guy that you're talking about, because he was on Tom Woods, right?
Yeah, Seamus. Like, those are so good. Like, they're just so funny. And like, when he's making fun of Dave Rubin, he's like, I agree. It's just really well done. And I think we need more of that. And I think we need to be, you liked Ron Paul because Ron Paul was a hopeful alternative.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I think we're failing on the hopeful alternative a lot of times. And I think I went back and watched a bunch of Ron Paul speeches from 08 recently, and I was just, he's a different person than he is now. He's a little more comfortable in the libertarian movement. But back in the day, man, you're like, wow, this is like really hopeful. And he's talking about the future and how great it's going to be. And are we as libertarian podcasters kind of translating that? And I don't think I always do a great job of that, but it's what I'm aspiring to be.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I think maybe that's what it is that, and this is a conversation that we have with a bunch of our, you know, just our basic sphere on Twitter, is that I at least, and I think Bird too, are tend towards the optimistic. Like I am, that's just the way that I'm built, is that like problems for me, and I've always been a little bit entrepreneurial, and I'm an engineer and whatever. Like, I like problems because that means I get to fix something. And so where some people look and they're like, oh, this is wrong, this is wrong, and this is wrong, I'm like, yeah, dude, that's awesome. Like, let's fix it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's a big, I need a little bit of hope. I can't just fucking drown in my own blood.
Bird, can you believe it? A libertarian engineer?
No, I can't, because he's a civil engineer.
I always thought this show was a little autistic. Yeah, right.
I was gonna do it subtly after you finished talking. If he didn't say my name, I was gonna be like, yeah, and you know, and I'm also an engineer. And
are you real? What's your professions? Like, what do you guys do?
I'm a full-time student. That's what I do.
Yeah, I've got a couple plates spinning, but real estate, land development, and engineering are my main booze.
Damn. What are you going to school for, Bird?
Oh, boy.
Are you a professional student? Are you in like your 10th year or what?
No. Yeah, like that kind of professional. No. I'm a political science, American history, and media studies major. So, I mean, I just kind of doing this.
Yeah, Chris, we talk about this. We've got like the spectrum covered. Like Bird and I are very different people.
Very different.
Oh, yeah. I know. I can tell.
But I mean, I think similar in a lot of ways, but very different.
Yeah, and I think that that's good from a podcast. That's rule number six. You need balance.
Rule six.
Yeah, you can't agree all the time. You've got to disagree on some things. You've got to have some creative tension, you know? Like we've had fist fights in the past. So like, you don't want to go that far, because then like a co-host leaves. We've had, it's been dramatic beyond what it needs to be. But but you do have to have that creative tension, because people want to hear that back and forth.
Okay, well, Carr, you and I got to figure out some shit we don't agree on. And
Yep, we got to figure that out.
It's been difficult, because it is really weird that the two, we rarely argue about anything.
Yeah, we don't.
I don't know why, which is I think why we have guests. So that we can argue with them.
I think it's because both of us. I'm trying to figure out how to.
I mean, this podcast was founded on the idea of like, and we had Todd Hagopian on, and he kind of explained his own version of it. Is the 80-20 rule is just talk about the 20 most important, the 20% of the most important issues 80% of the time. And it's like anything else, cultural things, we don't even talk about. I have no interest in talking about them. I'm only interested in what is the absolute essential to talk about that people will listen to, that if they stumble on this podcast, they go, oh my God, I never thought of that. Instead of, as we're talking about, actually trying to introduce people to libertarianism by talking about Operation Midnight Climax, let's talk about foreign policy in Iraq. Or if we're going to do something official, let's talk about something that matters and not, did you see the Mueller investigation? It's like, nobody cares about that. Nobody cares on our end. We know who our listeners are.
Do you have a number on that Climax episode?
I can get it for you. I could get it for you. Something to do later.
Yeah, I totally disagree with you. I think you're completely wrong.
Here we go. All right, attention. Here comes the views. Here comes the downloads.
Now, I do disagree, but not vehemently. Okay. I do disagree in that I do a show about things like Mueller, because I think there's a lot of new people. Maybe we have probably different audiences. I've been accused of being out of touch with the libertarian movement, having been a part of it for 10 years. About 5 years ago, I just said, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And I want to talk to normal people again. And I think there's some truth to that, because I do a show that I don't think, if you're not interested in what's going on in the Mueller case and what a libertarian thinks about it, then you're probably not going to dig my show all that much. But then there may be, and I think people do this, like they subscribe to a show, and then if there's a title they like, they hit download on it. Mm-hmm. But I do think that what I try to do is probably different than what you do, in that people are talking about it in the society and culture. Their friends at work are talking about it. That's libertarian should give them some analysis and give them the facts about that.
And I think you're absolutely right about that. My only point is we know where our audience is.
Right.
And so right now, the whole thing is keep them listening, keep them coming back for why they listened in the first place. And because there's a hierarchy of where you go as far as libertarian podcasts, and you considered yourself a jumping off point. You said you'd rather you'd be happy to start with the regular issues than point them towards Tom Woods or Pete Raymond, Mance Raider, or whichever name he wants to go by now. And I think that's absolutely right. I don't think you're wrong. I'm just saying there's certainly a division of labor in the podcasting world for libertarians, and I think we fill that one particular niche, which I'd like to expand from, and you as a professional, we're here to listen to you. But it's not that I disagree with the concept. It's just we found our little niche, and I think we can expand from there using your rules.
Carr, he is fucking this up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the vehement agreeance is really bothersome to me. I'm probably going to have to undercut somehow.
Throw you a bone. I put myself out there for ridicule, and then you don't do it. What are you doing?
Yeah, I like it too much, Spangle.
I bumped it. He said it, and you caught the ball instead of spiking it. I don't know what the hell you're doing.
I never played volleyball. Never.
I agree with what you're saying. I'm teasing you, but you are right. That's my point. It's like if you want to be a libertarian Republican, or you want to be a libertarian libertarian, or if you want to not think about politics at all and do crypto, or if you like whatever you're into, man, as long as you're advancing libertarianism, like I'm not going to criticize that. Like I think other people. Yeah, like I do a different show, and what I have always hated is as a more moderate person in tone, not necessarily in ideology, but in tone, I've always been criticized as softer, or maybe he's not as trustworthy. It's like, no, I'm just trying to do something different.
No, you're just reasonable.
But yeah, and I think there's because I just really resented the Ron Paul crowd when I was a Libertarian Party person in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12. Like
he's doing it again, Carr. He's doing it again.
Yeah, here we go. This is the set to me. I'm going to spike it. I'll show you how it's done.
Yeah. All agree that Ron Paul's a bitch.
The Fagcast takes the official stance that Ron Paul is a bitch. We pick a fight with. Oh my God.
Oh man, I love that we just go straight to the top.
We go to the top of the hierarchy. We go, you're a bitch. This poor, wonderful old man.
He was at our Thanksgiving dinner. We lure him in.
Yeah, we put him at the Thanksgiving dinner table, and now he's a bitch.
There's a review on my iTunes somewhere. He's like, I heard him criticize Ron Paul. I'm not listening anymore.
Oh, boo.
And I have been critical of Ron Paul, not because I don't love Ron Paul. I am a libertarian. Like, I was mostly libertarian except for the foreign policy part. And then in 08, I was like, oh, okay, now I get what's going on. Like, I get it. Thank you, Ron Paul. but I have a big problem with, I think, a lot of his followers, because I think libertarians fall into cult worship. I don't know if that cult...
What is
hero, cult hero, what is the term?
Cult of personality?
Just say Ron Paul. We know what you're talking about.
Exactly. I want everybody to do this. If you want to see how severe the libertarians fall into the cult of personality, go on your Facebook page and say, I think Ron Paul is wrong about X. Just pick something. Earmark.
Right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this.
Do it. You will not believe the hate you will get. I'm not listening to your show. And you just go, are we sheep or are we free thinkers? And I people think I'm criticizing Ron Paul when I say this. I'm not. I'm criticizing the people who blindly follow I don't want anybody following me. I'm lucky that I have an audience that questions literally every word that comes out of my mouth. Sometimes it pisses me off to no end. But I'm glad that I have collected a group of people who want to think for themselves. And I just think you have to, if you find yourself in 100% agreement with someone, then you maybe expand your horizons a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think Ron Paul is one of those people where it's just like, you say a bad thing about him and say Murray Rothbard's the same way. Like I have tremendous respect for Rothbard. I don't know how anybody could have written the breadth and depth of the things that Rothbard wrote, and he was a genius. But he also could be kind of an asshole to people.
That's actually the one area where Carr and I disagree, is in our like for Rothbard. There you go. That's one.
Yeah.
That is actually one genuine area where we disagree. Also, and I also kind of think Bitcoin is a little shit, Carr. I think it's kind of terrible. It's a bad idea.
Yeah. I think Rothbard's great. I just think, you know, it's not unfair to point out that this person was a human being. And, you know, he had very legitimate criticisms, like the Cato Institute, for instance, because they ripped him off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but to say Murray Rothbard could be disagreeable is not false.
No, No.
Right.
And I've had the Bert and I have also had this conversation. I think it stemmed on a late night text session on about Rothbard, like just trying, because again, I am a big fan of Rothbard. I'll say, let me rephrase that. I'm a big fan of Rothbard's work, a lot of it. And Bird didn't come up necessarily through that. I will say this, and I completely understand. I think Bird and I reached an agreement eventually over it, was that I completely understand the Rothbard fans, especially the ones that aren't as well read of Rothbard, who come out and are, and the man could do no wrong, because I definitely disagree with him on some things. Abortion, I think, is definitely one of them. Ron Paul, I disagree with on some things. I wish he hadn't signed the AUMF in 2000 or voted for the AUMF in 2001. But as somebody who is occupying, I will say, maybe the Ron Paulian or Rothbardian leaning positions, it started to become very frustrating, because you would say, well, I agree with Rothbard when he said X, and everybody's like, cult of Rothbard, and you're like, well, all right. Like,
they do the same shit with Ayn Rand, and I've never even read Ayn Rand.
And it's like, and that's equally aggravating. It's like really difficult to, I completely understand what you're saying, Chris, with the hero worship, that it does get really aggravating, but it spurs on even more aggravating information.
Yeah. Like we posted, when Trump said the thing about the 14th Amendment, we posted an episode the same day and roughly time as Tom Woods did. And, you know, several people are like, well, you got this wrong. Tom Woods says it's X. And I just pointed out, and let me be clear, I have nothing but respect for Tom Woods. I think he is a tremendous value, a tremendous asset to the libertarian movement. And I listen to like 90% of his shows.
I think he's a little bitch, honestly.
I think he has too many websites, frankly.
Yeah.
But I pointed out, like, what if Tom Woods is wrong and we're right? You know, yeah. Like, the chances are pretty low. Like,
once again, he has more websites than you, so it's probably unlikely that he's yeah. wrong.
this is rule number 7, and this has been the
get Chris a lot Benz. Of websites.
Yeah, that's true. Rule number 7 is don't be like me, and that I have been critical of libertarians in the movement when they've done things that I think are harmful to the libertarian movement, or I have done it to troll. Like, if you really want to get ahead, be like those punks at Being Libertarian. Who just say anything that's safe. Like Eric July just tweets out the most banal things, like taxation is theft Wednesday, and he gets like 800 retweets. Like, tweet out safe libertarian stuff that you know is orthodox, that you're not going to get any. Like, if you want to grow, that's what you got to do. Just kowtow to the movement and never say anything that might be even remotely controversial. And then you'll grow. But if you want to challenge your listeners, if you want to carve out a unique position for yourself where your listeners are free thinkers, then don't do that. Say some things that challenge your audience, even about their favorite people. But it's not a good strategy for growth. I think I've paid the price for it over the years. I think I've paid the price in terms of audience growth for two things: for not looking serious on social media because of the memes, and not seeming like I'm down enough for the struggle.
Hmm.
And so those are two things that you have to keep in mind. So like for me, my goal is to sit down and do a show that intellectually challenges me.
Okay.
And I have fun doing, and if anybody else enjoys it, cool. But I don't really care about that kind of stuff. I think I never expected to get to this point, but I say what I think, and I don't think that's always worked out well for me. I think orthodoxy is, so you have to decide, like, do we want to have a show that we're proud of, that we're having fun with, or do we want to just be super safe and just promote libertarianism the way that, you know, the Mises Institute promotes it and this group of people? Because it's not about those people, right? It's not about the people who put out the content. Everybody who puts out content is making a choice in what they want to put out. It's the audiences that are the ones that really are harsh about it and are the ones who kind of enforce a certain orthodoxy.
Hmm.
I think Tom Woods is somebody who is not afraid to go, you know, he makes a virtue out of defending certain aspects of the movement, right? And I think that's really good. I think that's really necessary. He's setting a standard for what he thinks is right. He's not being confrontational. But then I think a lot of people take that particular idea and then they beat up on fellow libertarians and they're not good at it. And that's the part that I find harmful a lot of times. So I think sometimes when I'm critical of other libertarians, it's really like the audiences that I have a problem with a lot of times, because I think the lack of sophistication amongst libertarians and the way that they conduct themselves hurts the movement.
Hmm. Well, take that, listeners. You can you could send Chris your hate mail or your love mail, depending
the
on...
Picking on the listeners is not a good strategy for growth, guys.
it's true. And I just want to mention as an aside, our listeners are not viewers, and so they can't see the feed right now. But I've really been enjoying your cat's efforts to stick its asshole directly into the webcam screen.
It's been so distracting. I've been begging
You've been waxing poetic this whole time, and that cat has just been sticking its ass directly in the camera.
Yeah. But we haven't gotten full, like, butthole shot yet.
I had a goddamn
pendulum go back and forth across the screen. I'm like, is it butthole time? And it's not. That's the butthole.
There it is.
That's the old butthole.
What is this cat's name?
This is Mittens, and she's the most annoying cat on the planet. And she loves to be as the center of attention.
Well, her asshole has been the center of my attention for the whole episode. You're just, I swear, you're talking, and it's just, oh, there's the asshole, and then it goes away.
I'm immune to talking in front of assholes at this point.
All right, let's do it. I'll do a summary of your rules, and you can check me off as we go, and then you can hit your plugs, and we could be out of here. Rule number one, and this is how you gain clout in the libertarian community, whether by podcasts or not. Rule number one, attack other libertarians.
That's right.
Rule number two.
That one's a joke. That was a good way to set it up, but you know.
It's not a joke to me, Chris.
No, we're taking it serious.
Libertarianism is not a joke to me.
Confront and escalate.
Rule two, organize your meme department, which I really enjoy that one. Rule three, get Chris Spangle to sabotage himself.
That's right. Set traps for your enemies.
Rule number four, get the fans of the show to share it and support it with the addendum of 4.5. The titles of the podcast matter.
Right.
Okay. Rule five, give people something of value. We're all capitalists here. We can create value, can't we?
That's right. If I'm going to give you an hour, what am I getting in return? Audiences are very selfish.
Right. Rule six, you can't always agree. So, Carr, we'll have to set up some late night sesh where we figure out areas where we disagree, and then we could just unload on a
just
podcast.
Just unload on each. Yeah. We, you know what we should do is we should just get real drunk for one, and we don't even have to release it. But just
aren't we doing that? Didn't we decide we were going to get really drunk for one?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So that'll be the one. And then rule seven, the final rule: don't be like Chris. Don't be critical of anything in libertarianism. That's rule seven.
Just orthodoxy all the time.
Okay.
you're challenging the state, not their minds. That's what you need to do.
Jesus, what a cynical catchphrase. The catchphrase of the podcast is: we're not going to challenge you. We're here to challenge the state.
I'm going to steal my own words.
That's really cynical.
Trust me, do this long enough, pal.
All right, he's very jaded at this point.
Piles of salt in front of the microphone, like just bitter and angry.
Thank you so much for coming on. This was brilliant. This was great.
This
has been a really good time. It was nice talking to you guys. Hopefully one day I'll learn your real names, but it's nice to talk to you, Bird, and you, Carr, and I enjoy the program, so keep doing what you're doing.
Give us your plugs.
Yeah, you can download We Are Libertarians on literally anything: app stores, podcast catchers, iTunes. We have we're just everywhere. Just type in on any platform We Are Libertarians, you'll find us and follow us. Hope you'll give us a listen. I'm really am proud of what we're doing lately, and really well researched stuff, and I hope that you'll enjoy it. You can follow me at Chris Spangle.
We won't, because your podcast sucks and you're a little bitch.
Oh, see, there we go. We got to do the heel turn. Thanks for coming on anyway.
And it's been an all right time, I'd say.
It's been okay. It's been
it wasn't punchy enough. You got to like really go punch.
All right, you asshole.
No, I don't think I was personal enough either. I'll tool it.
Remember, you're riding up with a lance outside of their house, drama.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. Bird, you've got the list, right?
Oh, yeah, but you know what? Everyone who we usually plug, step your game up. We're not plugging you guys anymore.
Yeah, they all suck anyway.
Yeah. That's how it goes.
Great. Right. I'm sorry, well, listeners. I don't know what I'm what I've done, but if I never listen to this, but those of you who do, I have got
what I brought. There's so much salt going around.
Perfect. On that note, I guess we'll end it. So until next week, guys, keep two hands on the wheel.
Peace.